Friends, I must also apologize to you for being late. I was sitting there waiting and waiting, and evidently some confusion, and the taxi came very late, and I finally took a taxi and came, and I'm very, very sorry about it. I'm very happy to be here in Dunedin and to meet all of you, because it's a new experience for me. Although I have been in New Zealand ages ago, it is a vague memory, and it's interesting for me to contact this country which is so far away. Somehow or other we think it's very far away, and we don't seem to think from India that America is so far away. I suppose it's because we are more in contact with those countries and less in contact with these countries here. So generally people think Australia and New Zealand are much further away than many countries which are even further still away. Anyhow, it's a very great opportunity for us to meet. I do not know whether you are all artists, or whether you are interested in art, or whether you are interested in India, and I do not know whether my way, my thoughts and my expression would be of interest to you. I am very happy to speak about this subject of art, the spiritual force, because actually it is my my own expression, and it is my own life, and in a way I think it will be true to say that it is also an expression of India, because in India the whole conception of life and all the different aspects of life is based upon spiritual values. Today one of the newspaper reporters asked me, in what way is the idea of art different in India from the Western world? I said, beauty is a common language for the whole world. It is one language which can harmonize all countries and all civilizations. And it is the one way where there can be no quarrel or no differences of opinion. No war can come as a result of difference in art, but war can come as a result of difference in politics, as a result of difference in religion even, though religion is meant to be a unifier, religion is a means of bringing brotherhood, love and friendship in the world, yet unfortunately religious followers have not always been a perfect example of their religion, and we have seen enormous amount of cruelty, enormous amount of injustice, all in the name of religion, while in reality it ought to be the exact opposite. Perhaps the time is coming when religion itself will slowly change, when people will begin to realize that the differences in religion matter less than those points which unite religion. And if we look for those things which do unite, then we shall see that actually, fundamentally, the basic truths and philosophy of every religion is identical, although there are certain ideas in regard to life, evolution and so on, which is different in every religion. And it has to be different because it was presented at different times to different groups of people, and therefore according to their ability to understand, the presentation also changed. Well, in spite of this, I am talking about religion because to me the essential feature of art is, in a way, it is also an aspect of religion, because there is a fundamental difference between this, the real religion, the basic qualities of religion, and the basic qualities of art. If you consider art as a great spiritual expression, because all beauty is a spiritual expression, and without the vehicle of beauty, no spirituality is possible. You cannot associate ugliness with anything spiritual. And therefore, it is really an instrument of spirituality, or rather art is an instrument of spirituality. It is a vehicle of great truths and great ideas. And if you try to understand what is art, it is really in another way an expression of the same spirit which we might call the religious spirit. When I speak about religion, I don't mean the beliefs. I don't mean the doctrines that have been laid down. But I mean more the religious spirit, the inner desire on the part of man to become unified with the highest life, the inner urge in the heart of man to become one with the divine spirit. That is what I call the religious spirit. So if you think of it that way, and you think of man who is in prayer, whether it is in a church or in a temple or in a mosque, it does not matter, because all who pray, they pray for that same one life. And whether it is in meditation or in silence, when the thought is turned inwards towards the unity with that divine self, that is called religion or the religious spirit. But when you think of art, it is not that which is turned inwards, but on the other hand, it is that same spirit, it is that same aspiration, it is that same inspiration that is turned outwards and expressing itself in terms of beauty, which becomes really a manifestation of that divine life, and therefore it becomes diversified in the arts. Of course, when I speak about art, we have also to think that in modern days there is art and art, there is religion and religion. All that is called art is not necessarily art, because according to my definition of art, there has to be beauty. Where there is ugliness, it cannot be art from my point of view. Not that an artist cannot portray sorrow or other things, but even in that, there is a spiritual quality. Modern art, unfortunately, with much of the modern paintings that I've seen in the art galleries of Europe and elsewhere, is really an expression of all the troubles. It's an expression of the indecision, the uncertainty, the anxieties and the cruelties and all the things that is going on in the present day. And therefore, a great deal has unfortunately come into the world in the name of art, because the present day world is what we would call in India a world of illusion, because many things shine out just by name. For example, brotherhood, the very word brotherhood is expressed in ways which is the opposite of brotherhood, and certainly differences are called brotherhood, like for example communism. There it is considered to be justice and brotherhood, but in action it is different. So in the same way, art also, what is beauty, is really that which masquerades as art. And we see so much which brings out completely the lower side of human nature, You see it in the dance, you see it in the music, you see in all kinds of entertainment, which is an unfortunate expression of the present chaos that you find. Because art is a reflection of life. It is a reflection of life within, and it's a reflection of life without. And the great artists are those who see the eternal life or the spiritual life, and they portray an art that is immortal, which will never die. And there are other artists who portray just what is there today, all the passions of today, and certainly it will not live, and it can never be an immortal art, because it is only an expression of the transitory emotions of today. And you see that when you compare great art. You take, for example, the great Greek art, the ancient art of Greece. When you go to the Parthenon, even with the broken pillars, the broken statues, even that which is a ruin is an inspiration to humanity. While you see the opposite in other ways, when you go to the art galleries in Paris, and the only thing you feel like doing is to turn your face away, because it merely reminds you of that which is crude and ugly in life. This is my own reaction. And you see that all the time in the world. At present, for example, that which is news is what is called the Beatles. Everybody is talking about the Beatles. Well, the Beatles is an expression of the way art is an expression of that which masquerades in the name of entertainment. Well, it's not something which we can be unhappy about, because in a way all destruction is towards an ultimate purpose, and it's a kind of a reaction to so much that has happened. And when that reaction is fully expressed, perhaps the world will again change into some new expression. And it will never be a copy of the old, because nothing creative is in form and ever a copy. And one of the most marvelous things when there is inspiration is that true inspiration creates something new. And what is new is just as beautiful as old, but is different. And yet fundamentally, the deeper side of it is always the same. So you see the Egyptian art, when it was taken to Greece, it has changed, and a new art was born, though it was from an old inspiration. And they say the ancient Egyptian art also had its inspiration in ancient India, and again it changed. And so you find all these varieties of expression in the world, because they are all aspects of that which is divine. They are all aspects of that wonderful creative life, which is an expression of the Creator, which is an expression of the real creative spirit which an artist is able to touch by his imagination, what I would call his meditation. Because to me, a true expression of art, when it is being created, is a form of meditation. Because if he is not able to contact the spirit of nature, if he is not able to contact the creative spirit of the divine force, if he does not contact that spirit, he can never bring down into something which is of extreme beauty. And his ability to become one with that, and the moment when he does feel one with that, that moment is the moment of meditation. And in that moment he has contacted something of marvelous beauty. And it is exactly the same experience to an artist as it is the experience of a saint when he is in high meditation and is able to contact him or that teacher whom he happens to worship. And therefore, in reality, art is really a divine expression. And all expression itself, it's not only the spirit behind the expression, but even the form is a divine manifestation. Sometimes when people say, I would like to see God, well, I feel like saying, wherever you see beauty, you have actually seen the form of God. Where you see nature, you have seen God, because the language of God is translated not only through the artist, but through his own art. That is nature. And it's by contacting nature, by knowing what is nature, you automatically know what is spiritual also. And all spiritual expression is founded upon this contact with nature. Now, one of the most important forces, I feel, in the world today is this force of beauty, if it comes, and if we really value it, if we really understand it, this force of beauty, which, in my opinion, is one of the great ways of bringing together humanity, one of the great ways of uplifting humanity as well, ennobling humanity, spiritualizing humanity too. Because one of the reasons why there is, for example, so much cruelty in the world is because a man is not able to be sensitive to the suffering and the feeling of others. If we can feel exactly as others feel, then we can have sympathy. But we don't have, and we don't feel, and we think it doesn't matter. Or perhaps if we are evolved enough to say, well, how terrible that when one man kills another, or a child is ill-treated, or that there is a cruelty between one race and us another. When we see these things, we may feel very deeply. But I feel personally that if we are truly sensitive, that sensitiveness will go much deeper still. Not only the depth to which we understand what man is to man, but we shall also understand our relationship to life in general. And we cannot know our relationship if we cannot have sensitiveness. And after all, what is the fundamental difference between a civilized man and what we call a savage? Unfortunately, a large number of people may think that the savage is generally a man or a woman who is not like us. Perhaps sometimes people think if somebody does something different from how we have been brought up, we have got certain artificial ideas of culture, and we have got etiquette, we have developed ways of expression in our manners, in our daily life, and so on. And we may think that if somebody is not exactly like us, then that person is not evolved, or that person is not spiritual, or that person is not civilized. And unfortunately, so much of our conception of civilization is based upon extremely superficial knowledge. People do not know that even savages have got their own code of honor, their own code of morality. I mean, those we call savages. According to me, I think in a way, this sounds almost pessimistic, according to me, we are all still savages, really. Because as long as there can be war in the world, I am thinking of the humanity as one family. I am not thinking of New Zealand or India or England or any particular country. I think of humanity. Well, we are still afraid of war, are we not? We are still afraid of what one country will do to another. We are afraid what China will do, what China is going to do. We are afraid of what Russia is going to do. We are afraid of so many things. And when you read the newspapers, you can see that the world is certainly not at peace. And there is all the time a fear. Now, why is that existing? Well, as long as that existed, and after all, we cannot say that the last war was so very long ago. It was only fairly short time ago. And could there have been greater cruelty than during that particular war? Well, as long as that can exist, then surely we cannot say the world has become completely civilized. And that we are actually civilized in every possible way. True civilization is only when we can actually feel one with all life, one with our people, and when we can be sensitive to the consciousness, to the thoughts, to the aspirations, to the beauty, and to the feelings of other people. And not only other people, I would say even to all creatures, because I would like to go even further, that the world can never consider itself civilized until we become sensitive not only to human suffering, but I would say to the animal suffering too. How much do we feel one with the animal kingdom? How much do we feel one with nature? And surely animal kingdom is as much part of nature. We like to put flowers in a vase. We appreciate the beauty of the flowers. We like to go in a forest. We like to appreciate the beauty of the trees. But we have not yet learned to appreciate something more evolved even than that. That is the beauty and the feelings of the animal kingdom. That's because we haven't become sensitive to it yet. And really, the basic cause of so much misunderstanding and the basic cause of so much cruelty, injustice, whatever you like, is due to the fact we are not developed emotionally, we have not become sensitive, we are not imaginative enough to put ourselves in the place of others. And surely, if we want to become sensitive, we have to educate ourselves. And even more, we have to educate our children. Because really, we have a great responsibility towards the younger generation. And if we want the younger generation to be different, although unfortunately, subconsciously, majority of people who want to educate the younger generation is to teach them to be what they are, to be just exactly replicas of ourselves. What we want is not that they should be like us, but they should be like their best selves, whatever it is. That should be the real idea of education. And we must present to them all possibilities of becoming their best selves. And the only way to help them to be their best selves is when we do not blunt their feelings, when we do not suffocate their natural tendencies for the love of beauty, for the love of all creatures, for the love of nature, and their sensitiveness. But what happens? We actually destroy that sensitiveness. Because every child is naturally sensitive, although it doesn't know what to do with its energy. Very often it will love a little dog or a cat, but you will find the child trying to destroy because it doesn't know how to use that power of love in a constructive way. And the only thing we have to do is to teach the child to use that power rather than to destroy that power. And that is where Education plays a great part. And if we want to educate ourselves too, there is only one way in which we can counteract the influences that make us hard, that make us solid. And that the only way is through the development of the emotions, the development of the imagination, and the development of our perceptions, whatever they are. And the only way to do it is to surround ourselves, to surround our environment, to surround our children with all that is beautiful. Now there is great art almost in every country. Now art is the most natural thing for a human being. Even a savage, what you call a savage, you take anybody, well, their first instinct is to dance. Their first instinct is to draw. And they have got a far better sense of color sometimes than the so-called developed people. Because very often the so-called developed people have, by sophistication, spoiled their natural. And we get what we call sophisticated beauty rather than the natural beauty. And you find that sense of color is very, very natural to people who are more in contact with nature, the simpler people. You go to Europe, now you see two contrasts. You go to all the villages and you see the national costumes. Certainly far more beautiful, in my opinion, than the Paris fashions. This is supposed to be sophisticated culture. Paris is supposed to be the great center of culture. Well, some of the most ridiculous things seem to come from Paris, as far as I have seen. But everybody accepts it only because everybody accepts it. The reason why we accept it is because everybody else does. Because we believe in a mass consciousness. We do not think and feel for ourselves individually, and we do not try to lead in our own way. And we are going through a kind of vicious circle, and we are beginning to accept the dictates of those whose main purpose is more commerce than art. And that is why we find the extreme contrast. Well, you see the peasants, it's not only in Europe, but you go to India. Of course, in India, everywhere, beauty had a very important place, and all the arts were dedicated to the temple, and all the arts had a place in the temple. All the artists who started their work in life were blessed from the temple because they felt that art is a great offering to the divine being. And therefore you found every art was really a temple art. You take the dance, which is called the temple dance. Now, there is no dance which is not temple dance. Everything is temple dance because whether it is a visible temple or an invisible temple, it is an offering. And therefore, all the arts were not dedicated expressions of a beauty and a manifestation of our own inner selves. And therefore the arts found a wonderful place, whether it is a great queen with her gorgeous clothes or whether it is a simple peasant in the village or in the field, the beauty was just the same. Whether it is a clay pot used by the poor man or whether it is a silver vessel used by the rich man, the beauty was just the same. Perhaps the beauty of the clay pot was even greater than the silver vessel. But as time goes and naturalness disappears, as sophistication begins to enter, as the mind begins to play a great part, when art becomes conscious, when it becomes a show rather than a sincere expression of what is within, then automatically it gets corrupted. And corruption takes place and it gets distorted. Because what really distorts art is the mind, the lower mind. It doesn't mean, of course, that artists don't need to have intelligence. They have to have an intelligence, but a much higher intelligence, a subtle intelligence, not the obvious, mundane, matter-of-fact intelligence of a person who says he wants to have an argument for everything. He wants to have a reason for everything. That which is ultimately spiritual, it's not possible to give a mental analysis and a reason. If somebody asks, is that picture beautiful? And you say it's beautiful. And then someone says, why is it beautiful? Now how on earth are we going to answer that question? We cannot answer. We can only say, I feel it so. It is my inner sense, my sensibility, my sensitiveness, my sixth sense tells me that it is beautiful. But if you want to argue, say that the snow-clad mountains are not beautiful, then, well, the only thing to do is, well, to be slaves of our own argument. And that is what the mind does. It destroys. Therefore, it is not through the mind that you can appreciate this beauty, not even through the emotions alone, because mere emotion cannot understand either. But it is through an emotion that is elevated, through a mind that is purified, and through the intuition by which you become sensitive, it is that alone which finally can tell you whether something is beautiful or not. You hear Bach's music, you may hear Beethoven's music. Supposing we were to take it to a law court to decide whether it is real music or not, who is going to answer? No one can answer. No one can discuss. No one knows the value of art. Because there can never be a value in our ordinary way. The only value is its spiritual value to us. It does something to us. It changes us. It affects us. And you may ask, why does it affect us? Why does beauty affect us? My own feeling is that the most wonderful blessing that humanity has ever been given is its ability to be ultimately true to itself. That there is no such person in the world who is ultimately wrong. A time must come when we must know the truth. A time must come when we must know reality. How are we to know reality? How do you know that Christ was a great being? You feel it. It appeals to you, not because hundreds of people have been saying so. How do you know that the Buddha was a great teacher? Because of something else. It's not merely the words. Because we can also repeat the same words, but that won't make us spiritual. So it's something more than that. And humanity has in itself the power to gradually to respond to these things and ultimately to become true to itself and become an expression of that beauty, so that gradually humanity will learn to go away from savagery into a refinement. And I believe that it is because of that every human being in the world has been given the power to love beauty, even if it is in a very limited form. That is why I think deep down, fundamentally, everybody is an artist. Not only he who paints or dances, but everybody is, because we all have Even if it is a warped idea, we want beauty. We do select. We can't help selecting. Very rarely have I come across somebody who will say, they may say, I am not artist. But in small things, in their daily lives, or in their homes, or when they choose clothes, or when they choose a house or a room, in small things, they want to select something which they like better than something else. Even if it's only limited, still that is the thin end of the wedge. And that means there is a desire for beauty, only the full comprehension has not come. And it is that desire for beauty which I believe helps us to grow spiritually. Because the recognition of beauty without is really a recognition of beauty within, though we don't necessarily say so, although we have not fully thought it out, but it is in reality that. And therefore, this power, when it ultimately grows, it will give us the power to become sensitive. And when we become sensitive, then we shall become sympathetic, we shall become understanding, we shall become compassionate. To me, a true artist can never, never be cruel in its highest sense. Of course, you mustn't become matter of fact and say, what about that artist or this artist who are so emotional? You hear of great artists, they are the most unbalanced people sometimes, because they are taken to tremendous height by the conception of beauty. And when that creative moment is finished, they come right into the depths. And so their emotions swing. But remember, you must not think of the extreme to which they have gone, but the fact that they have been able to touch the heights, that they could do it even for a few minutes, that is a great thing, that's a wonderful thing. And if they couldn't do it for a few minutes, there would be nothing, the world will be barren. You take a person like Beethoven, a person of great emotion. He felt very deeply, he suffered, he was depressed, and supposed to have been a very difficult person to live with. But he had the power to contact beauty. He had the power to bring down, according to me, the voice of God. Because music is the voice of God. And that, as long as you have that power. But if you have it all the time, if you have that power all the time without the changes, then you become Christ-like. And that is the fundamental difference between a very great being, a perfect being, and a great individual. A great individual may have fluctuations, but a perfect being does not have those fluctuations. He lives in great heights. And so ultimately, this spiritual force is to lead us to those great heights. So you will find, even in civilizations that are apparently crude, in civilizations that are cruel, you will find the ability to respond to beauty, ability to respond to great ideas, because that is the blessing which is given to him by what we might call the grace of God. And thank God that they have that power, because that will save them. It will be their saving grace as well. You take the German people. There's so much cruelty, there has been cruelty in Germany. They have the ability to militarize, they have the ability to lead, they have the ability to obey, they have the ability to build, they have the ability to destroy. They have all these capacities. But they also have the ability to bring great philosophy, great music, great science, all into this world, because In those moments when they can touch the music, they can see the antithesis of all the lower self. And I believe it is that power which is given to man, which is a salvation for all of us. That is why in India, with regard to the great dance, there is a description that not only dance but music, that if you cannot read the scripture, if you cannot understand its meaning, but if you know this divine beauty through the arts, you have benefited as much as if you have read the scripture, because you have known the spiritual life in another form, not normally accepted by people, I suppose, because unfortunately for a long time, even in comparatively recent times, it was considered, many parents consider it an unfortunate thing when their children take to art instead of shining in something else, not realizing what a great message they can give to the world and what a wonderful truth they can bring down into the world. And really, this conception of art in India has been of a high order, because art and the appreciation of beauty is almost as if you are in prayer. It's almost as if you read the book of the spiritual ones. And you may not know it in your mind, but you know it in your feeling, you know it in your emotions, you know it in your own consciousness. And the ability to have that knowledge helps you to become one with life, helps you to become one with all humanity. And ultimately, that is art. Because art is to not merely to display. It's not just something which is on a platform. It's not something in an art gallery. Art is life. And it must be expressed in life. And the highest art is the ability to live and to absorb all that is beautiful within you, so that you not only create a work of art, but you become a work of art. That is the important thing that we have to remember. And therefore, art has a great message to the young, to the old, to people of every single nation. And it is this message which I feel is the great message of the future in the world, because the world today is trying to come together. We are trying to create the consciousness of the one world without barriers. We can never do it. Science has become a great force. Well, science is wonderful. Science also leads you to the understanding of nature. But while it leads you, except for the greatest scientists of all, science by itself is a mental approach. And a mental approach without the emotional balance, without the education of the heart, can become a way of destruction. And it is only through the feelings, through the message of the heart, can there become a balance in the world. So that science is not something to be afraid of, but science is something to revere, because it is a descent of a great power and a great force. And this balance can only take place when first artists themselves feel their own place in life, their own message, and when humanity also knows what is true art and its message. True art does exist. Just like a flower that is thrown in the gutter, so often we find people may hear Beethoven today and go to a nightclub tomorrow. We are all able to mix the two. But I believe if we are sensitive, it will not be possible, because once you have perceived real beauty, you cannot perceive ugly. And when you have perceived beauty in form, you will also perceive beauty in life. And therefore, it will ultimately lead the world to a greater spiritual consciousness and uplift the world, uplift humanity, and therefore become a wonderful, great spiritual force in the world, for which I believe the world is really waiting. How it will be, in what way it will come, it is not for us to say. But it must come, because as character changes, civilization changes. And as art changes, so does character change. Wherever you have seen a great civilization, you have seen great art. Wherever you see the deterioration of character, there you also see the deterioration in art. Because one depends upon the other. I can't tell you which begins first or which ends first. But one is dependent upon the other. And artists can lead the way to the ennobling of character. And surely the time must come when once again the world will grow to an expression of a marvelous civilization, which will not be merely a Greek civilization, an Indian civilization, a Persian civilization, or an Egyptian civilization, but a civilization of the world. And I believe that is the new expression, and it can come through the artist who is dedicated, who is spiritual, who knows the power of his own expression, and through all people who, though they cannot create either by hand or in any other way, but also share in that creation by their appreciation, by their understanding, and by their wholehearted devotion to beauty. This is what I really feel, and therefore I consider art is a great spiritual expression for the benefit of humanity. And ultimately, the true goal of humanity and human beings is to be spiritual creatively, not stagnant with beliefs, with do's and don'ts, intolerance of likes and dislikes, but open, free, tolerant, understanding, and therefore building a world, a wonderful brotherhood in which humanity as well as the subhuman kingdoms can be included.